You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario since 1922. Find and follow us on Instagram at CFRC Music. Coming up on this special community takeover of our airwaves, we're talking about the Crossroads Village Cabin Community with Our Livable Solutions Acting Executive Director Crystal Wilson, Board Director Christine Bedard, and alumni Jan English. Our Livable Solution, OLS, is a registered charitable public benefit corporation operating under the Ontario Not-for-Profit Corporations Act. OLS is dedicated to supporting individuals experiencing homelessness as they navigate complex systems and coordinate care. By actively listening, observing, and identifying challenges, OLS fosters meaningful discussions to explore possible solutions. Through collaboration, OLS empowers individuals with lived experience to advocate for and contribute to the development of sustainable, impactful solutions that drive positive change in their communities. Crossroads Village is an 18-cabin community shaped by the insights of people with lived experience of homelessness. Built by and for people who understand the realities of housing insecurity, Crossroads Village reflects a practical, community-driven approach to care that supports stability and fosters successful transitions out of homelessness. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, and in studio today with us for our community takeover, we have a group from Our Livable Solutions talking to us about Crossroads Village. So maybe we'll just go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves.
I'm Christine Bedard, Crystal Wilson,
and Jan English.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Crystal, maybe we'll start with you. So you are the acting executive director of Our Livable Solutions. Can you tell people what is Crossroads Village? I guess,
what do we hope it to be?
What do you hope Crossroads Village to be?
Crossroads Village is a concept that was developed out of a 2 and a bit year pilot project, the Sleeping Cabin pilot project that was based seasonally between Portsmouth Olympic Harbor and Center 70 between 2022 and 2024. So it's an 18 cabin community. We vetted out the concept of it with the Sleeping Cabin pilot project, and it's to be located behind Crossroads United Church at 690 Sir John A. Boulevard.
Okay, so you have a location, you have a plan. Where are we now with it, and where are you hoping to go, or where do you need to get? Because you do have a deadline coming up of June 30th.
We do. Yeah. So the City of Kingston retained ownership over the cabins that were used for the pilot project. There's 17 cabins sitting in storage somewhere, we don't know where. And we came to an agreement that Our Livable Solutions could acquire ownership over the cabins for $1, and also the city would assist with $500,000 allotment to be able to build out the site, pay for the common building, and pay for infrastructure. But OLS needs to raise $1 million, which reflects 2 years operating costs to be able to go through with that deal with the city. So we have been trying and trying and trying. We do have a deadline of June 30th, and if we hit that deadline and don't raise $1 million, we don't have to have $1 million in our bank account, but we have to have proof that we have the 2 years operating funds. Then the city has the right to sell the cabins.
You've talked about this in a press release that you sent out, and this is more than just a living space, right? This is a holistic initiative. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that, and perhaps we can have our other guests to talk about what something like Crossroads Village would mean versus the resources that are out here right now.
I would say the difference between Our Livable Solutions and many other organizations is that we engage very strongly with people with lived and living experience. So we don't do any initiatives unless it's come from people in need of housing or people who have been through the process. And if there aren't people willing to work on the initiative, we don't do it. So we have a lot of initiatives on the go, but Crossroads Village was born out of the original encampment at Bell Park in 2020. I went down, I have a family member who experienced homelessness, so I was quite aware of how difficult it is to exit homelessness. So when the encampment first started building, I went down and spoke with people and asked them what home looked like to them, and then did some exploring and brought back some concepts to them. And Chrissy was actually part of that at the time. She was part of the conversation at that time.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So when this lovely lady in her big white pickup truck just started coming down to our encampment site, which was in the literally right in the parking lot off Montreal Street at the Bell Park, like the golf course area where you first pull in. And all of a sudden this woman starts coming around with this big, huge dog. Her dog's name's Jigs. And talking to all of us within the community. And she was asking us, you know, she's the first person that came down in there and actually asked us, like, what would a program look like to you guys that would be something that you'd be interested in. You'd actually like, why don't you guys go stay at the shelters? And a lot of us, we wouldn't go stay at the shelters because, well, for one, your stuff gets stolen there. For two, they like to say there's a lot going on there to help people in the shelters and stuff. But I found that there wasn't really, that it was pretty much just a place to go and shower and eat. And then you have to leave right away. You get kicked out first thing in the morning. If you do get a bed there that night, which a lot of times you couldn't get a bed there that night because there's not enough beds. So it was just much easier to control your own environment, control your own things by living in a tent and having your own little community in the middle of a parking lot, in the middle of a city where everybody just drove by us. But yet this lady just comes in and starts asking us these questions. So we started talking with Crystal and she kind of started becoming like part of our driveway. She was just always there helping out. I can't even remember how that started about the t-shirt.
At one point, so my background is entrepreneurship. At the time this was happening, I had a software company and I have grown up with entrepreneurship as my survival tool. I grew up in the military and married into it. So I moved every couple of years. So I had to have some way of surviving. So I'd just build a business, sell it. And that was my way to survive military life. But what I was seeing when I was in the encampment was very entrepreneurial skills. And, you know, lots of people say, oh, they should get a job, whatever. But what I was seeing was entrepreneurs. You know, they can overlap in skills, but not as much employees, but entrepreneurs. And so we started talking about micro businesses. And we were like, what could we do? And then Chrissy designed a t-shirt based on the Bell Park totem pole. So we had it printed and Chrissy and crew sold the t-shirt and they raised the first $400 that started the cabin program.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And what about for you?
I had been on the street for 4 years and I had two rescue dogs. One was a service dog. And every time that I would try to do something, a lot of the times I'd get, no, you can't come in here with your dogs, whatever. Stops you from doing things. Well, I refused to get rid of them. So I basically was in a tent on and off for 4 years. And I had tried every shelter that would allow me to go in. And they just treat you like you are incarcerated, like you are just a number. Nothing matters. Everybody's the same. Well, we're not all the same. So I was giving up hope and somebody gave me Crystal's name and said, call her. And so I called one afternoon and she says, well, I'm actually sick at home right now, but I have a cabin coming available, but it'll be 2 weeks. Now, if you've never been homeless, you don't understand 2 weeks. 2 weeks means get lost, go away. We're not getting back to you. Everything is always 2 weeks and nobody gets back to you. So I talked to her and she took my information. I hung up the phone and my friend said, how'd that go? And I said, well, she said 2 weeks. So I guess that's it. So then exactly 2 weeks to the day, I get a phone call and she says, I have your cabin ready. Wherever you are, I'll come pick you up. And I said, I have dogs with me. And she goes, that's all right. I got a dog. You can bring him in the truck. And she drove me right there. She picked me up at 7 o'clock on a snowy night and took me there. And I just couldn't believe it. When she opened the door, I just stood there and cried because it was all like a bed and matching curtains and a coffee mug. And it was your own space. And it was something that would lock so you could sleep and have security. You could leave your things in there and you knew they would be there when you come back. My dogs were okay. I could go to my appointment. And it's not just the key. The key represents so many things. You lose your self-respect out there. You lose your integrity. You lose everything. And that key represents all of those things. Because once you get there, it slowly starts to come back. If it wasn't for Crystal, I don't know. I was giving up pretty much.
You bring up a good point there in that I think people who have never experienced anything might have assumptions about, oh, well, why don't you just go to a shelter? But there's many different reasons why people don't want to or cannot access them and why that's not an option. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could speak a little bit about some of the different rules in place or some of the other concerns. I mean, we talked about theft, we've talked about pets.
So actually, I was just going to add on to, and this kind of answers the question too that you're talking about. I remember because I was working at the cabin community because I have lived experience. So I was hired on with Crystal and I was there when Jan moved in and when Crystal brought her there the first day. And she came in and just sat down at the community table at first. Well, went and seen her cabin and she was asking me about the stuff that goes on there and what the rules were and if there was showers and if she could cook in that kitchen. And I'm like, yeah, this is the community space. This is the kitchen. You know, you have your fridge and stuff in your cabin too, But you also have the community kitchen area where you can come in and you can cook your food, make your meal, sit down and eat if you like, bring the dogs in with you if you like. Showers are right down here at the end of the hall in the bathrooms, and it's all available for you. Then she's noticed the washer and dryer, and she's like, oh my gosh, there's laundry too. How much do I have to pay for that? And we're like, you don't pay for that. You just do your laundry as you need to. And seeing her with her face and like the excitement in her when she's seeing, I have all this stuff around me now, like I can do all these things. And as the weeks went by, we started working together, and she was telling me about how much she loved that she had a space where if she needed to get something done, she could leave the dogs in her space and lock the door, and she knew that they were safe there. In the summer, they had air conditioning. In the winter, they had heaters. It was a lovely space for her to come into. And then we start working on like goal setting and doing things in the community, just trying to get her reconnected with everyday things that people do that she hadn't been able to do in for so long because she's been living day to day, spot to spot on the street.
How long was the cabin pilot?
We opened January 17th, 2022, and we ran until September 30th, 2024.
It must have been hard to see that end.
It was very difficult. Especially difficult. Like, we did fight hard to make sure that everybody ended up somewhere mostly safe. Everybody ended up with a roof over their head somehow. But it's a very strong philosophy of our whole organization that we listen to people with lived experience, and we listen to people who are closest to the challenges and try to fulfill what they tell us is what are the barriers and what are the solutions that you see. So the cabin community represented that. This was something that worked well. Our neighbors stood up for us. In the beginning, we had a communications plan laid out, and then unfortunately, like, we didn't know we even got the cabins yet, and then the mayor announced them on the radio. We didn't even know we had them. So we had to suddenly scramble, right, to communicate with the neighbors because we wanted to go out ahead of time and have conversations. And so some people were upset because it was a surprise for them, and they didn't know, and they didn't understand what we were up to, and they, you know, have seen lots of things on TV. So some people spoke up against it. But after the first 4 months, because we were initially a four-month pilot project, the same people who spoke against it came back to council and apologized. And for them to do that, that was huge. That made our residents feel so welcomed. And, you know, having the Portsmouth neighborhood and then the Center 70 neighborhood were extremely welcoming and gracious with us and just generally interested in what they could do to help. That makes a program, mm-hmm. for sure. But having neighbors, like some of the neighbors took petitions out to petition council. They spoke for us at council. They, you know, helped us with town hall meetings. When Crossroads United Church said that they could lease the land behind their church for $1 a year, can't get better than that. Some of the neighbors from both locations came to our town hall meeting to talk to the neighbors of Crossroads to let them know. It worked out really well when people have safe roofs over their head and places that they trust and value and where they feel heard. They take care of those spaces and they take care of those neighbors. So having done all of that work and all of the confidence building with people and all the progress that people made, to have that just shut down, that was upsetting. And knowing it was their idea, we're trying to listen and fulfill their idea, that was the most upsetting part. And, you know, knowing that the cabins are sitting somewhere, we don't know what's happened to them, we don't know what condition they're in, and there's people stuck outside in the cold. This winter was harsh and those cabins were just sitting empty. It was pretty frustrating.
Were you given a reason why they stopped?
Officially, no. We had heard some things about how much the program cost, and that was very confusing to us because the amount of money we were receiving was under what we needed. We were scraping. We didn't have a paid management position. We had, you know, 12 staff and 17 residents and no paid manager. We were really scraping every penny that we did receive. Provincial dollars that came through the city went to pay staff. And we weren't charitable yet, so fundraising was difficult. But the fundraising that did happen paid for the extra things that needed. But we really scraped through in our budget. And we knew, you know, I'm a project manager. I can look at another initiative and go, okay, I can kind of figure out how much that might cost, right? And so what the public was told was that it was the most expensive program in the city. That was very confusing to us. You know, part of the expenses that we have 24-hour staff. We don't staff with cameras. You can't staff with cameras. You can't mitigate risk with cameras, and you cannot have good conversations with cameras. We staff with people, real people who've been there. And so that, you know, adds a little bit of cost, but, you know, not extraordinary. And so we had asked for the finances at that time and received a list that didn't make a lot of sense to us. We did eventually do a Freedom of Information request and received the list of corporations or businesses that had been paid under the program, including the City of Kingston, which included the moves, because the cost of the moves seemed, we were confused. by what was being reported as the cost of the moves, because I was there for every one of them. The moves were 3 days of no sleep for me to make sure that it happened and happened well. And the list we received, the total cost of the program was $1.175 million. There was things on the list we don't understand, like a payment to an RV company for $25,000. We don't know what that was. We didn't have any RV, so not sure what that was. But, you know, in reality, we know that's one of the cheapest programs in the city. And so for Crossroads Village, we used our budget for the pilot project to figure out what it would cost. And it works out to $76 a night per person. But it's hard to compare because there's not good transparency and accountability in the system. So we've been looking at other cabin communities in other cities. We've helped a number of other cities launch their cabin communities. And their budgets are astronomical compared to what we've figured out. We're looking at every other cabin community is well above $100 a night per person. And most of them are like in the 140 range. And so we're like, we're curious why there's such a difference, but we know we've got a good program and a low cost solution for taxpayers. And then recently there was an article in the Whig Standard, which outlined the operating expenses of the newest shelter on Sydenham Road. So then we finally had something to compare to. And that shelter works out to $168 a night per person. So, you know, that tells us that we're on the right track. You know, we're saving taxpayers money by creating a program that's inexpensive, but also creating a program with people with lived experience that they want. We'd rather build programs that people want to have, not that they have to go to.
I have a question, mm-hmm. Crystal. So mm-hmm. the Sydenham Road one, are they allowed to stay there all day long?
Okay. I was told that they can stay there throughout the day. At least the person I was speaking with was there when the weather was colder. So okay. Maybe it's different now that it's warmer.
Well, I'm even when sure. It's warmer, they still need shelter from the heat, yeah. Right?
Yes, yes. When they leave, they have to say where they're going and how long they'll be.
It's the same as at the Hub. You can sleep there too, but there's not that many beds, mm-hmm. right? But then during the day, I know that from when I actually went there and stayed there. I've never stayed overnight there. I was never able to get a bed there. But on top of that, they had to rotate us in and out because there's so many people in need. Mm-hmm. So you literally have to stand outside and wait to be let in, whether it's hot or cold out. And then they literally will go around and tell people like, okay, you've been in here for 15, 20 minutes. You need to go out. The next three people have to come in.
I think the biggest difference between any emergency shelter and the cabin program is that you have a key to lock your belongings up. You don't have to haul them around. You have privacy in your own cabin and you have a key to lock your belongings. So you can go out, do your appointments during the day and not worry about your belongings. But also you have a real ability to practice your basic life skills. So the way we operate the program is as close as we can to somebody having their own apartment. So there's no curfew. They can choose when to come and go on their own. They're adults. We only allow people in who are over 25 because there's a different support program for people under 25. And so, yeah, you can have grandkids came to visit, kids came to visit. It's awesome. And a lot of family reconnections happen, which is great. But also people can cook for themselves. They can decide.
Decorate. Yeah. You can make it your space. Yeah. It's yours.
When you're in the system, you're told when you can eat, what you can eat, when to shower, when you can go to the bathroom, when you can go to bed, when you have to get up. And when you're in your own apartment, there's nobody that's going to be standing there telling you that. So you have to develop those skills yourself and redevelop those habits, those living habits yourself. And so we have staff to coach. They're there to coach, not to be security guards, or we're not bossing people around. They're there to encourage and to, you know, have conversations when somebody's having a tough day. They're there to listen. But having the ability to cook for themselves and start planning their food and budgeting for food makes a huge difference. And then the nice thing that happens is people will do group meals and or just they'll each cook and sit down at the communal table together and have meals together. And it's beautiful to watch.
It's like having a family that you didn't know you had and you got to meet them all. And it's a community. When somebody has something bad happen, everyone helps. And it was like 18 people I didn't know, I'd never met. And within days, you're checking on each other. And like, I truly miss it now that I'm housed. It was really nice because you could be around people if you felt like you were social, or you could just be by yourself and do your own thing when you were having a bad day. And the staff that are there, they don't hound you about things. If you need assistance or you have a question, you ask them, they find out. If they don't know, they get on the phone and they'd find out for you. And anything that you want to try to do to better yourself, they'll find a way to get it. If it's a course or a tutor or whatever it is, they help you move ahead and get your life back.
The value of, as you said, like peer support and peer guidance and having people to talk to who actually have time now and know that they're not running on emergency mode, right? You have time to actually plan and imagine things.
Like I have anxiety issues And so I would make my mind up on something, and then I would change it before I got over to the main building. And then I'd make my mind up again, and I'd change it. It was so nice just to have a calm voice that would say, you're on the right track. This is good. You're doing okay. The support. And to make you feel like you're a person again is really important.
And do you think it was the cabin program that allowed you to find housing?
Definitely. Yeah. I wouldn't have found it without it. I honestly, when I was out on the street, thought I would never be housed again. After 4 years, it had been a long winter. I had spent it in a tent on the ice, and I was done. I was just done.
And for the Crossroads Village, what is the difference with the pilot project that happened and what you are hoping to develop here? Will you have more autonomy in terms of the programming that you develop?
Well, we won't have to move seasonally. We'll be in one space. Those moves are really hard. Everybody endured. I was so impressed. Like every move, people would have to pack their entire cabin because the cabins had to move empty, right? And then reset them up. It was an opportunity to purge each time, but it was hard on people to move back and forth. Eventually, once people were with us long enough, they knew where they were going to and what the benefits of being in that neighborhood. Center 70, the community garden was there. So Loving Spoonful was there at the time and Blooms as well. And we integrated really well with their organizations and they were very supportive. So we could look forward to being back with them. And then at Portsmouth Harbor, Cork was super supportive. The Portsmouth District Association, super supportive. And just people walking by with their dogs in the winter would stop and say hi. So we had reasons to look forward to every move, but it was hard on them. So not having to move anymore, that's a lot of time that we can now spend on programming. Since the cabin community has closed, Our Livable Solutions has continued, and we now have a community house for 7 people, and that's funded entirely on our own without any government funding. And we have a first aid initiative. So this year we have a goal to get 100 people trained in first aid. Peer support again, people with lived and living experience. So Elizabeth Fry just had a first aid session with 17 people. So there's 17 more people trained to help each other. And we're developing a communication network with a tool called MeshCore that uses radio frequencies outside of Wi-Fi and cell service. We have a forest care team that's building forests in underused backyards. And we're creating a network of edible forests. Eventually, it takes 3 to 5 years to make it work out, but to eventually have a food source in the city. So we've developed a number of other initiatives that we can then integrate into the cabin program. We didn't have those initiatives when the cabins were running. So it gives opportunities for engagement in the community. It gives opportunities for jobs. The forest care team is paid employment for people with lived experience and gives more sense of purpose. I should backtrack a little bit. So one of the things that we were told very clearly when we were developing the cabin program is that people don't want to be kind of bossed around by people that are like younger than them and don't really understand what they've been through. And they made it very clear to us that having staff with lived experience was extremely important. And so that's what we did. All of our staff have lived experience in some way. That's how Chrissy came to be eventually. Her brother was working for us and let me know that she was doing really well and, you know, could we consider? And I was like, absolutely, because I knew what a great street mom she was. And she was back in school, finishing her high school. Now she's about to graduate college. We're super proud of her.
That's what I was kind of thinking too, because like when I was working at the cabins before, I was just going back and doing my grade 12 and I had just been sober for a few years and I was just kind of starting to find my own feet again too. And I really wanted to be a part of the cabin community and I really wanted to work there and I just kept working towards it. And then when I finally got there, they ended up closing down. I didn't stop there. I decided I'd go to college now. So I went to college to do a community developmental service worker. So with that being said, I've been working my placement at the Elizabeth Fry Society of Kingston and I run programs there too. So, I mean,
we have been so impressed with Chrissy's progress. Chrissy's actually a member of our board now. So we've invited her to the board. So our entire board of directors has lived experience in some way. And, you know, watching Chrissy bloom, we were thrilled to be able to bring her to the board and make sure that or the insight that she brings to make sure that we're making good choices when it comes to programming and decision making.
Mm-hmm. I actually graduate at the end of next month.
So exciting.
I'm so happy for you, Chrissy. Yeah. Thank you. Amazing. You've done a great job.
One of the approaches we have in our programming is is that we hire people with lived experience. We don't get involved in credentialism. We don't look at their education so much. We couldn't pay as much as some other agencies or some other roles could pay, and we didn't have benefits. So our approach was take the resume as it was and then figure out what it would take to get them into a higher paying job. So we didn't expect people to stay in the cabin program forever.
And you should see my resume now.
Yeah. So we actually have, I believe it was 6 people who did just that. They came into our program, they work on social assistance and did the work as staff to build up their resume and ended up getting higher paying jobs out of the program, which was great. We love that. Like, love when they move on. We don't expect people to stay there forever. But I think, you know, it's the listening part. Listening to people give that kind of feedback helps us build better programming.
I imagine too, Christy, having you there showing people what's possible when, as you were saying too, like sometimes important. Yeah, you don't, it's hard to find hope, right?
It's hard. You need a light at the end of your tunnel. You need something to work towards or to be engaged about, because if you don't, you lose hope out there quickly.
Yeah.
So when you see people that have been there and that they're housed now and they're succeeding and everything's going well, you believe it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you hope to hang on to. Mm-hmm. And that's important. Out there, there's not a lot to hang on to.
Can you talk about what you've been working on lately? What have you done even just this year?
I was housed and I've written some letters for a couple local papers. What else have I done? I've been helping
she's,
you.
She's belittling herself. Jan is now writing on the Kingston Crow. She's been published twice. She's an excellent writer. It's been great to have her insight into homelessness and exiting homelessness.
And you've been helping out with the microloan program too, yeah. Hasn't she?
Yeah, yep.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yep. She's one of our volunteers and also was a panelist on the Kingston Canadian Film Festival this year.
We've talked about the many advantages, the stability, the community, and just the sense of place that could happen with this. If people are listening and they're like, how do I help this get to the implementation phase, especially knowing that June 30th will be here quickly. You made a unique call in your press release, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and what you're looking for, who you're looking for, and how people can reach out to you.
Thank you. So we are really good at engaging with people with lived experience. We're really good at supporting people through their journeys. We're not so good at tooting our own horns. You know, that's been a challenge. But we're looking for people who can help with ideas. We're very interested in social enterprise ideas that could create funding and also jobs. We are working on one that hopefully will work out, but it won't be ready before June 30th. But especially, you know, to get out of this granting donation cycle, if we can generate our own income, that would be great. So people who might have ideas around that, we're currently looking for a building, if there's a, you know, charitable landlord out there. And we're just looking for people who might want to pitch in and help us figure out how to get the cabin community funded and Crossroads Village funded. June 30th is a tight deadline. We may have an opportunity for an extension. We can raise about $150,000 a year ourselves. So we're really trying to raise $350,000 times 2 years. So how can we raise that in a way that's sustainable as well? We do have a foundation in Toronto who has offered a $700,000 line of credit at 2% interest, which is very generous of them. And we're just working through the paperwork on that. It's not really feasible to run a cabin community on a line of credit. We still have to have a way to pay it back, but it could help us progress things forward. We're looking for ideas. We're looking for volunteers who might want to help out. There's room on the board for more board members. Having a stronger fundraising team would be helpful. People who can write grant applications, people who have connections to other people who can share our story, share this recording, and help generate interest about a program that does work really well. We've been impressed with how far the people that we did get to work with have gone, and we know the potential to keep going is there, and we do our best to support people that were in the program no matter where they are.
And we have a fundraising event coming up, do we not, Crystal?
Oh, we do.
Do you care to share?
Shout Sister Choir, who've been amazing supporting us. Janice McAlpine, Georgette Fry have been amazing supporting Crossroads Village. We actually have a plan for a kitchen party with Shout Sister Choir once Crossroads actually gets opened, which will be super fun. But they have offered a fundraising concert for us June 16th at 7 p.m. And it's at Crossroads United Church at 690 Sir John A. Boulevard. We will have, thanks to the Davies Foundation and some community donors, we managed to purchase the 18th cabin. So the city has 17 cabins in storage, and we now have the 18th one. So we have it in a trailer, and we'll be taking you around the community, but it will be at Crossroads for the Shout Sister Choir concert. So people can come take a look at the cabin and see what we're talking about, so that they have a full understanding of what we mean when we say a cabin. So everybody's welcome to attend. The tickets are at the door. Contribute what you feel it's worth. We don't set ticket price. And just come have fun. It's such a fun concert. I think this is the fourth concert the Shout Sister has done for us, and it's always fun.
You said that you have established charitable donation status. Mm-hmm. How can people find out more? How can they give? How can they get in touch?
Sure. We have a website, ourlivable.solutions, and livable is livable. Sometimes that gets confused. And there's lots of information on our website about all the different initiatives, including Crossroads Village. We are also on Canada Helps if people want to make charitable tax donations. You can mail us a check. The address is on the website. Our contact information is on our website as well. We also have a Facebook group, again, Our Livable Solutions. Yeah, reach out even if it's just with questions. All questions are good questions, so reach out.
What is the timeline? There's been a ton of work that's gone into it, mm-hmm. and a ton of thought. You have the spot, you have the cabins. What is the timeline, assuming everything goes to plan, in terms of when these will be up and running?
Well, it's going to be up to the planning department at the city. With the donations we've raised so far and our charitable bingo funds, we did hire a professional engineer who's helping us navigate the pre-opening work. Our next step is a wastewater study, which our board agreed to fund. So that study, they have somebody lined up to do it right away. So we're hoping a couple of months, but it really depends on how long it takes to get through the planning process. So once the wastewater study is done, we're kind of hesitate. We don't want to spend money that we shouldn't spend. It's right. Other people's money. So if we're heading down a dead end road, we want to be careful about spending money. But we've been inspired enough that we've got confidence to keep moving forward. And certainly the feedback from people, we get asked all the time if people can get into cabins, people in encampments who want to get into the cabins, and they get upset with me. They think I'm, you know, not being truthful. And I'm like, I'd love to have you in a cabin, but we don't have them right now. And then they get upset. And so, you know, the feedback we're getting from the streets is this is still a good, viable project. It's a place people would like to go to as opposed to feel like they have to go to. So we will keep pressing forward. Our engineer is telling us a couple of months, but I did just task him again with going back to the planning department and asking them like what's feasible in terms of a timeline. So we would really like to get open before winter hits.
Right. Contextualizing like a couple months versus, you know, oh, 5 years from now, this might happen. Mm-hmm. This is something that could be implemented mm-hmm. and make a huge difference in the community very soon.
Immediately. The constraints are that we still have to run water sewer to our common building. Our common building, it's built by the manufacturer Modular Energy Solutions. Our budget for the common building is $350,000. And the quotes we got from builders around Kingston was far higher than that, $600,000-$800,000. So Modular Energy Solutions offered to build it for us and then build it at their location, their warehouse, and then bring it down here by truck so that we get it built fast and get it built within our budget. They've been amazing to work with. And so then we'll need to worry about running electrical and sewer and water to the common building. That's kind of the biggest time constraint. The cabins already exist. We just have to move them back to the site.
You have the cabins, you have the personnel, you have the interest. Is there anything else that anyone wants to say as we wrap up here?
Please just come out and help to come donate, come help us out, come volunteer, come to the Shout Sister Choir on the 16th of June and just help us get this project going. It's a good initiative and we need to have the cabins back in Kingston.
Thank you so much, all of you, for coming in. I truly wish you the best of luck in getting to the next step, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Sign up now to take over CFRC's airwaves yourself. CFRC 101.9 FM invites all Queen's University student groups and Kingston community organizations to take over our airwaves. Join us on air for an hour to talk about your student group or community organization, and also present your own playlist of fun music chosen by your team. This is a great opportunity to talk about what your group does, how others can get involved or provide support, any big events your group has coming up, and how to keep up with the latest news about your group. Apply by visiting cfrc.ca/contact and selecting Apply for a Club Community Takeover. This project is made possible through the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.